Christian Overland is the new director of the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he's agreed to talk to us about his coming over from the Henry Ford Museum and his vision for the society. Thank you very much for agreeing to a welcoming interview. Welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be in Wisconsin. I've been here for 2 weeks and 3 days.
Okay, here's an overview question.
Yeah.
You're a historian, museums, in an era of social media, instant access, Twitter, Facebook, all these other things. How do you sell history in an instant access social media climate?
Well, history is content, right?
Yeah.
And social media is all about content.
Instant content.
And instant content. So if you think about the idea of like Instagram, for instance, think of all those wonderful pictures that people are sharing that are historical pictures. They could be, you know, photographs of architecture, photographs of famous people from the past. But it connects people in their own community. And that's fascinating because history connects people together. It's what we have in a shared kind of resource of people. It's who we are. It's who defines us.
Is social media then a resource for organizations like your society?
Absolutely. Social media is heavily used by the Wisconsin Historical Society. And I follow us on Instagram, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Welcome to Wisconsin. You were at the Henry Ford Museum for how long, sir?
So I was at the Henry Ford, which is a museum complex in Dearborn, Michigan, for almost 26 years.
And what was the draw to come to Cheesehead Land, Aaron Rodgers Land, et cetera?
The great state of Wisconsin? So the draw to come here was multiple reasons. One, I was born in the Midwest. I was born in Minneapolis. And the western side of Wisconsin was my playground growing up, biking, the Elroy Sparta Trail, skiing in Telmark, fishing, you know, in the Hayward area. So that's family for me, one reason, right? Coming home. Second reason is it's an amazing organization. It's considered the premier state history agency in the entire United States.
It is.
There's no other collection like this that has the like a collection of North American history that's that pervasive and that deep. And it really is a wonderful collection combined with state history, along with the idea of the press. We publish books. We have underwater archaeologists in Wisconsin, three. We also have a great educational format where we publish the fourth grade school book for history. And all of that combined really promotes the idea of history really well. So when the opportunity came up to be a member of this organization, to be a member of the team, and have a leadership opportunity, I was sold.
What do you consider the most fascinating era of Wisconsin, or you just came from Michigan, Midwest history, the most fascinating era?
Well, when I think about Midwest history, you know, and about, you know, kind of from the founding peoples coming in, the American Indian, I love that connection from the growth of people in North America and the civilization. I also like contact, the first contact aspect with the voyageurs, the French Canadians, and then immigration coming into the Midwest. I myself am a descendant of Norwegians and Mennonites, and so that moved into America. And so that immigration story coming to the Midwest, the agrarian lifestyle, I mean, let's face it, the Midwest feeds the world. So when I think about the history, I think about all those transformative moments, whether it's, you know, the beginning of statehood in Wisconsin, the Civil War, the Industrial Revolution, producing automobiles like in Kenosha, Nash, Harley-Davidson in Milwaukee, the Wienermobile in Madison, you know, keeping with the transportation theme.
Which a society doesn't have, right?
Which we do.
You do have. Thanks for the correction.
We do have
Where is it?
It's undergoing restoration right now.
Is it going to be publicly available to be sat in and touched?
Yes. Well, it's going to be publicly available to be part of the educational program at the museum.
Why? What's the attraction of the Wienermobile to the Historical Society?
Oh, it's great history. I mean, Oscar Mayer is a great company in Wisconsin, local story with national, international impact. The Wienermobile was a way that, you know, could connect to people every year driving out throughout America, you know, from the early 50s to today. You know, you could see a Wienermobile in a variety of places, but having the Wienermobile, a historic one from the 60s in our collection, it does a couple of things. One, it connects people in a relevant way to history. You know, one is the agrarian, food processing, but also advertising history. The Wienermobile is an advertisement billboard on wheels, and it's a great statement in marketing too. So you wrap all that up and you have fun engaging in history. And I think one of the ways people learn really well is if they're thinking about it being engaged, relevant history, it opens up their minds to learn more.
Michigan and Wisconsin have similar histories, don't they? From the farming communities to, as you pointed out, the agrarian, and then you have the migration of African Americans to manufacturing jobs in Milwaukee.
Lumber and mining?
Yes. Don't you have similar parallels in both states?
We do, especially when thinking about the idea of how towns were coming up with their agrarian lifestyle. You know, in the late part of the 19th century, more people were moving off the farm in a pretty rapid pace after the Civil War and creating these cities around us that happened both in Michigan and Wisconsin. And thinking about industries that were coming up in both places, you know, Kenosha, again, staying with Nash, for instance, is automobile. There's a reason why. Because
Nash to AMC and then the plant closed. Excuse me for interrupting you.
Well, to the point about actually automobiles coming up is because the Great Lakes was a wonderful way for transporting goods, raw materials. The railroad industry, too, that came into both states. So you had the combination of mining, natural resources through mining, whether it's wood, and then also this wonderful transportation network with the Great Lakes and railroads, and then the will of the people and the ingenuity of the people in the Midwest to actually build these wonderful ideas and manufacturing and companies.
Historical societies, though, don't they also have an obligation to talk about the legacy when those manufacturing plants shut down, causing some urban decay, Detroit, for example? So is that part of the portfolio of this society?
History's never done, Steve. You're right. And so when looking at history throughout times, it's important to understand transformative moments in time, both in the positive and the negative. So when you're thinking about foreclosures of companies or people going out of business, what happens to the towns? You know, what happens to the people? And what's the next step? You know, is there growth at that point? Is there movement? Is there migration to another area in the state? Mm-hmm. You know, all that's important to understand that. And it's also, when you're thinking about Detroit or Milwaukee or any of the great cities in the Midwest, their kind of rise coming up and then going down a little bit and rise coming up again is really interesting. And I think there is something going on in the Midwest again. There's a resurgence, there's a revitalization, there's renaissance, you know, that's going on. More companies are moving into the Midwest. You know, more companies are coming in, and the cities are growing again. So what I think is fascinating about it, whether it's Detroit or Madison or Milwaukee, is that you have new neighborhoods that are coming up. You have an entrepreneurial spirit happening again. We hear innovation all the time now. It's part of our nomenclature in American society, especially in the Midwest. And so that kind of can-do spirit of the Midwesterner, too, is why people come here, too.
I was not aware that Wisconsin society is regarded as number one in the nation. And that's because of the vast amount of collections. But so here's my question.
Yeah.
What challenges, maybe what things could this society do well?
Yeah.
Better?
I think one of the things is building the new museum.
I want to get to that. Yep.
Okay. And so that's a big thing. So when I think about the society as the premier agency for history in the United States, in state history especially, what I really think about is kind of all the assets that are here that we do really well. And so the collection is fundamental. And I would include the historic sites and the museums that we have, the 12 throughout the state. Mm-hmm. The other part of that, too, is the programs that we offer, educational. Currently, the educational book that we publish for the schools in Wisconsin and in the state history is considered the benchmark state history education book in the United States. So you add all these pieces together, and that's where I can confidently say, I believe we're the premier state agency of history in the United States.
Let's talk about the museum that's been on the score, I think, since the 1970s. That was a fascinating story in the State Journal in which you and the museum director talked about your vision for a new museum. Mm-hmm. Now, in your resume, you say you specialize in creating quality visitor experiences. What type of visitor experience does someone visiting our current museum have or have not?
Today?
Yep.
So the problem is with the museum today is that it's a 1980s museum. It's been updated in exhibits. but it really is a smaller museum compared to the capacity demands that it has put upon it. A lot of people want to come in. So part of the problem of guest experience.
School buses here a couple hours ago.
Yeah, yeah. I just walked down from it, and I was inside the museum earlier today. And so part of what I keep witnessing over and over again, and Mike Hollander, the museum director, sees it every day, mm-hmm. is that school kids can't get inside the museum effectively. You have to kind of keep moving them up the stairs before you get more in. It's just not big enough. And then where do they eat their lunch? So a time ago, it was good. But the audiences have grown. And the school kids want to come in. Families, too. So when we think about good guest experiences, moving to great guest experiences, part of it is you have to have an operational layout where the guests can come in, feel comfortable, unpack themselves, have a stroller, use restrooms right away. School kids need to have a place to put their lunches, a place to the teacher to gather them, and then also to have enough space to go through the exhibits.
That's an old hardware store.
I know.
How many square feet does it have?
Right now, I think, I believe, it's about 17,000 square feet of exhibits.
And if you could wave a wand, your new museum would have how many square feet?
It's closer to 45,000 to 50,000.
So you would significantly
yeah.
double
it. More than double it, yeah.
Double it.
And so it would be a combination of permanent exhibits, which is there now, plus around 5,000 square feet for temporary exhibits, spaces to do thematic exhibitions. The centennial of the Capitol, for instance, of Wisconsin, was celebrated recently, right?
Yes, yes.
Wonderful exhibit inside the Capitol. So doing those type of things, being able to switch faster, and when I mentioned earlier about history needs to be relevant for a great guest experience too, you do need to update the exhibits. People need to see themselves. People need to understand a connection to history to really want to dive deeper into it and learn better. And that makes great public history if you can actually make those connections.
That's prime real estate on the Capitol Square.
It is.
And it interlocks with a lot of historical buildings and all that. So what steps are you taking to get a new museum? What pledges of support have you received from the Department of Administration? And how much do you have to raise privately? So lay out the financing and timeline, please.
Okay, so the Department of Administration has given us a letter of intent for $70 million to be enumerated in the next budget.
Yes,
okay.
The 1921 budget.
Right, so that's a big step. Number one funder, state of Wisconsin.
How much again, 70?
$70
million. Okay.
Okay.
And the rest?
And the rest is that we need to raise a significant amount of money to get closer to 100,000 and beyond that. 100 million, excuse me.
That's why I asked.
Steve, thank you for taking me back to that.
That's why I asked the clarifying question.
Yeah, it's 100 million overall.
So you're looking for
And then $20 million for an endowment beyond that.
So it's a $120 million project. Mm-hmm. That's got a lot of zeros.
Significant, isn't it?
Yeah. Did the DOA letter of intent to put you in the next budget, did that give you a timeline?
It did. So we need to raise a significant amount of money by September of this year. And
significant. So, what's that mean?
I don't know yet, other than, you know, we do need to show kind of progress towards that goal. And so if the $50 million goal is that, we need to like show significant amount of progress to hit that goal. And so we're thinking about that goal of $50 million.
By September.
Yeah, and if we can, and getting it there.
And you're no stranger to these campaigns to upgrade facilities, but you have to tailor a campaign to Wisconsin. So
right.
How are you going to sell people? You don't have a tin cup. How are you going to raise $50 million?
That's a great question, you know, Steve. And how we're going to do it is that the team has already been working for a number of years to create relationships with people all around the state. And so those relationships that, whether it's been creating content already and talking to different stakeholders, talking to potential donors, all those relationships have been being fostered, you know, forth. So we feel confident that we're able to do that.
Is there, do you have a plan B if you don't raise 50 million pledges by September?
Our plan B is that we need to be significantly ahead of the game in raising money. And we hear more and more and more about that there's a real need for a history museum that's for the 21st century audiences, that's designed to be a 21st century museum. So here's my answer to you. We're going to keep going, and we're going to build that museum. The idea is not giving up, but the idea is to stick with the plan and do it.
The Madison Rotary is one of the largest in the nation. When you give a speech to them, asking them to support your vision for a new museum, boil down your elevator talk for that. How are you going to sell them?
How am I going to sell it? So the first thing is that history defines us. It defines who we have been, who we are, and who we will be. And as the great state of Wisconsin, we have a role as a state agency to connect that history to be meaningful and relevant for our citizens. The big deal of how to do that is creating a 21st century museum that connects to the classrooms, connects to every school child in the state of Wisconsin, and then take it from there, a place where families can actually go and see themselves. We're going to have a genealogy interactive piece there too, where people can actually look up their families and look up, you know, what their towns were and make that connection. So my pitch to that is we need to be the rest of the world, have a state-of-the-art museum that represents our history well so we can educate our citizenry and always be competitive.
I've covered the Capitol long enough to know that there have been questions raised about attendance at our historical sites. How are they doing? I understand you've been visiting some of them.
Yeah,
but
I have.
How are the attendance numbers over the last year? Are they viable financially?
So I think about the 12 museums, you know, some have been going up, like Old World Wisconsin has had peaks in the recent years and going up. And the only reason why is focusing on guest experience and really figuring out how to make those connections for people and investing in staff time, investing in good training, and using some of the best models that are out there. So when I think about that number of museums and the recent programs that have been put into place, mm-hmm. I see the upward trend happening.
Are they standing on their own financially? The historical sites?
So that's a great question, Steve, because in kind of our portfolio financially, mm-hmm. We're about 40% earned revenue and contributed revenue.
Yes.
And then the rest, 60%, you know, comes from the state.
Yes.
So
our
design is never to actually have anything pay for itself entirely, but to help with the earned revenue, contributed revenue, to contribute back to operations. So for instance, think about this for a second, in terms of like Old World Wisconsin, there's a number of staff that work there, but there's also a huge amount of staff that work here with the history part to help support them with collections, mm-hmm. Connections to the archive, marketing and stuff too. So, you know, it's never meant to for every site to pay for itself.
Right.
But, you know, we spread those expenses around, spread the revenue around to make it happen, lift all boats.
Well, your ambitious goals lead to you when you draft your proposed 2019-2021 budget that you have to submit to the governor. Will you be seeking a significant increase given your vision to do things a little bit better?
That's a great question. I don't know. And the reason why I don't know yet about that, Steve, is that...
Because you're 2 weeks on the job.
You're 2 weeks on the job. and so here's why. And let me tell you about these 2 weeks on the job, too. I've just started to meet all the employees. I've had great learning sessions, learning more about the history of the organization. I've just started to meet some of the sites people. I'm going to La Crosse on Friday and then back out west next Wednesday. And then up to Madeline Island when the ice breaks and then to Black Point. And then I'm going back again. So right now I'm just learning the operations. I'm learning about what people need. And strategically for us, the new museum is really the biggest investment that we see in our future.
Job one, that's your top priority?
That is. And I would say strategically that's the big priority right now. And then also how do we keep running the operations of the other 12 museums and all of our programs to better serve the citizens of Wisconsin.
Somebody watching this show who wants to help improve the museum, how can they get more information? Because you're just forming a plan. You have no architectural scheme to show us.
Right.
How can they get involved?
So we're actually going to be holding stakeholder meetings throughout the state, as a matter of fact. So we're going to hold them here in Madison. We're going to be up in the Fox Valley. We're going to be out in the central north part and in the west, too. in a big way, asking people for comments about it and actually talking to people about their history. The other part I would say about that question, too, that I've learned, Steve, is that our staff's been doing that for 3 years already, been, you know, talking to some stakeholder groups. Now that it's publicly known about building this new museum, and that's the intent of it, we're going to be talking to more people about that. It's important to get feedback, because this is really the People's Museum.
Is there a potential synergy between the Historical Museum and the Veterans Museum, kitty corner from your current facility?
So the biggest synergy that we have right now between both organizations is our Society of Archival Preservation Facility, where we actually house are going to be housing their collection. So that's the big thing. There is currently, in my understanding, no synergy in the museum at that point.
But
we partner with them on the collection facility.
Okay, you don't have eyes on some type of a merger at this point with them?
A merger?
Yeah.
No.
Merging the two museums was my question.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
How important
I haven't heard that.
No, and I haven't either, and let's make that clear.
Yeah.
I
have not heard that.
How important is Circus World Museum to Wisconsin's history?
I think Circus World is very important to Wisconsin's history. I was just up there Monday. And a little aside, a little personal history, I visited there every year from 1961 until about 1975. And this is the reason why. I had cousins that grew up in Chicago, and I grew up in Minneapolis. It was a halfway point, the Dells and Circus World. And so my mother and her sister, my aunt, had 5 kids apiece. All 10 kids converged on the town and Circus World. So I grew up with it. I think it's extremely important because it's a wonderful story about entrepreneurial spirit. You know, at the home of the Ringling Brothers Circus. It really is. It's a National Historic Landmark, you know, setting. It's also a place where we can celebrate the circus today because the Ringling Circus stopped. So when we think about where can you celebrate that, where can people go see a piece of that true history and experience living history every day when it's open? Circus World Museum in Baraboo.
And because the Ringling Circus did stop, I wondered if the Baraboo facility has had an off year just because are circuses less popular in America?
I don't know the question. I haven't done the marketing study about it. Our circus is less popular in America. I know the intention of what happened with the Ringling Brothers, you know, because they weren't getting the audiences. But then there's things like Cirque du Soleil that has, you know, garnered huge audiences. So there seems to be a revival of the circus in a certain way. But again, we're not an actual, you know, circus going around the country. We're a National Historic Landmark that talks about the history of that and connects that relevant history today that can be both entertaining and educational.
How does a professional historian like yourself view the national debate over guns and gun control? As an opportunity?
Is it a debate? I mean, I don't understand the question.
What opportunities do historians like you see in the national debate over gun control and gun safety?
So, you know, a question like that is, I'm a historian. I'm not an anthropologist. So I look to the past, Francis, and try and bring them forward. But I would say to kind of help you with that is that looking at transformative moments in our past, you know, there are some of the answers to that that could help the future and where we are today. And I think that's the gift of history is that we could look back and analyze the past and see what happened back then and bring those stories forward and see if they're useful today.
You've just started 2.5 weeks on the job. You will be a successful historical society director in 5 years when we're having this interview, if. Finish the sentence.
The opening doors to the new State Historical Museum happen on State Street.
By when? Timeline?
2023.
Okay. Well, Christian Overland, welcome to Wisconsin.
Steve, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.